They got their first surprise immediately after supper was served. As they were gathered around the campfire, a group of Pawnee Indians, their faces covered in war paint, suddenly appeared and began a tribal dance. Their whoops and cries frightened many of the guests, including one woman who fainted when one of the Indians danced near her. Durant calmed the excursionists by explaining that he had paid the friendly Pawnees to stage the entertainment. The next day began with Durant offering the male guests the choice of taking part in either a buffalo or an antelope hunt. Once this adventure began, the excursionists turned hunters could not believe how many buffalo and antelope they came upon so quickly. What they didn't know was that Durant had also staged this event. He had paid professional guides to round up great numbers of the animals so that his guests would have an easy time bagging their trophies. No record has been found as to what was done with the animals that fell prey to yet another of Durant's shenanigans. Once the 2-hour hunt was over, the journey resumed, and late that afternoon the train reached the 100th meridian. Durant had told Casement to expect his group of excursionists and urged him to have his men working as furiously as they could for the benefit of the guests. But when they arrived at the anticipated spot, all that was there was a large sign that read, 100th Meridian, 247 miles from Omaha. Casement was quite willing to put on a show for the visitors, but he was not going to halt his progress waiting for them. By the time the excursion train had reached the meridian, the UP crews had moved 40 miles farther down the plains. Immediately, Durant had the excursion train move on to where the end of the tracks now stood. Then, after leaving the train, the excursionists looked on in awe as Casement's men laid down more than 800 feet of track in less than 30 minutes. The day ended with the guests proudly having their pictures taken with the workers. That evening, as the excursionists got ready for the return journey to Omaha, they made a group decision. They decided to issue a formal declaration, publicly thanking the Pacific Union for making the excursion available to them. They also wanted to let the world know what an extraordinary thing the UP was accomplishing. They expressed their feelings with a formal resolution. Whereas an excursion party of ladies and gentlemen from various places in both hemispheres started from New York City on the evening of October 15, 1866, to visit the Union Pacific Railroad as far as finished, to a point west of the 100th meridian of west longitude, and whereas said excursionists, with many others who have joined them on the route, have this day reached said destination at a point on said railroad 275 miles west of Omaha, resolved that this excursion party here assembled in the center of this vast continent now offer up our heartfelt gratitude and thanks to Almighty God for His manifold blessings, among which we enumerate a union unbroken and indestructible, with all the material resources necessary for the comfort of mankind in a high and rapidly advancing state of development, and with a vast network of railroads and telegraphs, essential not only to our national prosperity and the interests of all our people, but also to the civilization and commerce of the world, including among the most important of them all, that vast work, the Union Pacific Railroad. Resolved that it is the deliberate opinion of this excursion party that our nation and the world have abundant cause to rejoice that the Union Pacific Railroad was projected and is in successful progress to completion, and we now congratulate mankind at the success of this magnificent enterprise. Resolved that our thanks are due and hereby tendered to the Union Pacific Railroad Company for their energy and enterprise in the rapid construction of their railroad, as well as for this excursion. It was a magnificent testimonial, particularly as far as Durant was concerned, coming from so many people in the position to either politically support or invest money in the Union Pacific. One of Durant's concerns had been that some of the excursionists, particularly those from the West Coast, while enthusiastic supporters of a transcontinental railroad, might be more inclined to invest in the Central Pacific than in the UP. During the return journey to Omaha, Durant had the engineer stop the train. Inviting his guests to disembark, he led them on a more than two-hour tour of one of the most fascinating phenomena of the plains, an enormous prairie dog town. His guests shook their heads in both wonder and amusement as thousands of animals popped their heads out of their holes and then just as quickly retreated back inside them. Still, Durant was not done. Farther down the tracks, he again ordered that the train be halted. As the sky became brilliantly illuminated, the excursionists peered out the windows at what even those who had lived in the West all their lives regarded as the most spectacular sight the plains had to offer. A roaring prairie fire. It was awesome, it was thrilling, and it was more than a little bit frightening. And it, too, had been deliberately staged by Durant. When the excursionists returned home, they could talk of little else than the wonders of the Wild West and what the UP was accomplishing in the wilderness. Some, like engineer and politician Silas Seymour, went a bit overboard. Writing of the excursion, he described it as the most important and successful celebration of the kind that has ever been attempted in the world. What pleased Durant most was that many of the excursionists did just what he had hoped for and became Union Pacific investors. But it wasn't only the political figures and the wealthy businessmen on the trip who made the excursion such an overwhelming success. Along with his desire to attract needed funds and increased political support for the UP, Durant had hoped that the excursion would bring the company favorable publicity. And without exception, the reporters from the nation's most important magazines, whom Durant had invited, wrote stories not only describing the wonders of all they had experienced, but also portraying the Union Pacific as a company acting heroically in the interests of the American people. Proclaiming that the UP's march across the plains was as great an achievement as the Union's triumph in the recent Civil War, the Cincinnati Gazette declared, "There is nothing connected with the Union Pacific Railroad that is not wonderful." Responding to statements like these, people across the nation purchased millions of dollars worth of Union Pacific bonds. The great excursion had served its purpose more than even Durant had dreamed. Thanks to both the glowing endorsements and the funds it received, he could not help but feel that the Union Pacific had gained a leg up in a race with the Central Pacific that now promised to become even more intense. The mighty locomotive. Type of the modern, emblem of motion and power, pulse of the continent. That's how the famed American poet Walt Whitman characterized the locomotive. And it was highly publicized events like Thomas Durant's excursion to the 100th Meridian that emblazoned the locomotive in the national consciousness. The Central Pacific locomotives that made their way through the Sierra Nevada and across the Nevada desert, and the Union Pacific locomotives that left their billowing trails of smoke across the American plains, were made possible by one of the world's greatest developments, the harnessing of steam power. The first workable steam engine was invented in 1712 by the Englishman Thomas Newcomen. It was used mainly for pumping water out of flooded British coal mines. Newcomen's invention was not efficient enough to be used for transportation purposes, but in the late 1700s, James Watt, now regarded as the father of the steam engine, came up with a series of inventions, including pressure gauges and steam regulators, that paved the way for the use of steam power in locomotives. In 1802, British inventor Richard Trevithick created the first steam-powered engine that could propel locomotives along rails. In February 1804, after the first trial run of his invention, Trevithick reported that he had transported 70 men and about 10 tons of iron approximately 9 miles on a trip that took 4 hours and 5 minutes. But this was too long a time to capture the public's imagination, so Trevithick's invention did not catch on. In 1814, however, the first practical steam locomotive was built by Englishman George Stephenson and his son Robert. In 1825, the Stephensons gained further fame when they established the Stockton and Darlington Railway, the first public railway line for steam locomotives. They followed up this success when they built their now famous steam locomotive, the Rocket, which attained the unheard-of speed of 29 miles per hour. The first American steam locomotive was built in 1825 by John Stevens, who demonstrated its use on a circular track in his backyard in Hoboken, New Jersey. The first locomotive to operate on an American railroad was the Starbridge Lion, which was shipped to America from England. Like other British locomotives that followed, the Starbridge Lion was too heavy for the relatively light and often uneven American tracks and was soon put out of service. In 1830, the distinction of being the first American locomotive to pull a passenger car on a railroad went to Peter Cooper's Tom Thumb. Although it was small, the Tom Thumb was powerful enough to convince the directors of the newly formed Baltimore and Ohio Railroad to use only steam locomotives on their line. In 1831, a giant leap forward was taken when E.L. Miller's Best Friend of Charleston became the first locomotive to pull a train of cars on an American railroad. The Best Friend was in service for almost 6 months, until its driver, annoyed by the sound of its hissing steam, shut down a safety valve, causing an explosion that destroyed the locomotive and killed him. Despite this disaster, American manufacturers soon came to dominate locomotive building. By the end of the 1800s, one company alone, the Baldwin Locomotive Works, was turning out 600 locomotives a year. Nowhere in the world was the locomotive more visible than on the Transcontinental Railroad. American philosopher Henry David Thoreau spoke for millions of his fellow citizens when he proclaimed, "When I meet the locomotive with its train of cars moving off in planetary motion, with its steam cloud like a banner streaming behind, it seems as if the Earth has got a race now worthy to inhabit it."